Parsha of Vayera opens with the famous episode of Achasas Orchim, Avram Avinu, the three Malachim, and what doesn't he do for them? And actually, the reverberations and consequences of this act of hospitality actually echoed throughout generations. And according to Chazal, according to the Gemara in Maseches Bava Metzia, on Daf Pei Vav, whatever Avram did for these guests became repaid for his children, for his descendants later on, in the form of the way that they were sustained in the Midbar. He gave his guests food, and Hashem gave the Jewish people food. He gave them water. Hashem gave them water. He stood over them, who omeid aleihem, to take care of them, to oversee their needs, and so too Hashem with the Jewish people. But actually, not only is it midah keneged midah in terms of item, but it's actually even more closely commensurate. For the Gemara says that whatever Avram did for his guests directly, personally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided for the Jewish people also personally, so to speak, directly. Whatever Avram delegated to someone else in that area, HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the future also delegated. And what does this mean practically? Says the Gemara, with regards to the matter of food, Avram prepared it himself. Vel HaBakar Ratz Avraham, he ran to the to where the livestock were, and he prepared it, and therefore midah keneged midah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided food for his descendants directly, whether in the form of the slav or in the form of the man. It was direct from Hashem to Bnei Yisrael. Similarly, says the Gemara, Avram himself stood over them to oversee their needs, making sure they had everything, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu also personally was by Bnei Yisrael. However, in the area of water, as we know, Avram says, Yukachnam Admaim, let water be taken by someone else. And because Avram had water brought for the guest by someone else, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also had water provided for the Jewish people through someone else, namely Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's the Gemara. The Be'er Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Salant, asks a very simple question. And that is, on this occasion, we do see that Avram said, Yukachnam Atmaim. And therefore, for what it is, and for whatever it means, because he had water brought for his guest directly, so too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided water, pardon me, indirectly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided water for his descendants also indirectly. The question is, Avram Avinu is in the Hachnosas Orchim business. That means that he does this constantly. Are we to understand that he never brings water for anyone? It is a matter of policy that it's always brought by someone else? For if we perhaps suggest that there were times when the guest needed a drink and Avram himself brought water for the guest, then why not have that as a source for HaKadosh Baruch Hu similarly bringing, giving water directly to Bnei Yisrael? Why is it that because he did not do so on this occasion, were there no other occasions? So one can make almost a composite, shall we call it, Masa Ovos, whereby the direct bringing of food and of shade here will help them to receive it directly, and the direct bringing of water on another occasion, let it be from a year ago or 5 years ago, there's no expiry date, there's no statute of limitations for Avram's good deeds. So why should all eyes, so to speak, be on this event? And as is a very Jewish response, the Be'er Yosef replies by asking another question. And that is, the truth of the matter is, we don't really find that there were other deeds that Avram performed that had any reverberations and any rewards down the line for his descendants. But in a sense, that itself now becomes the question. If Avram has been extending hospitality for decades, why is it that all of a sudden you have this one episode, and he does what he always does. He invites guests in, and he feeds them, and he looks after them, and all of a sudden, this one time, parenthetically, when they didn't even need it, right, being malachim, but this one time, it has such consequences. We may ask, manishtana hachnasas orchim azeh mikol hachnasas orchim, shall Avram Avinu? But the answer says, Ber Yosef, the reason why this episode had such an impact beyond anything else is because of the circumstances behind this act of hospitality. Namely, generally speaking, Avram Avinu, he takes guests in, and it's wonderful, and so it should be, and there's the chus avos, and but in a sense, that's his forte, that's his field, that's his specialty, and good for us, and good for them. Here was different, because even Avram Avinu, at the beginning of Parshas Vayera, could have been excused for taking the day off. After all, it's kechom hayom, it is unbearably hot, whatever they say about mad dogs and Englishmen, notwithstanding, no one can move in such circumstances. And moreover, as we know, he's recovering from the Mila, Yom Shlishi Lemiloso. Even HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to visit him, for Bikur Cholim, as Rashi says. So putting all this together, it would have been perfectly understandable for Avram not to be on the lookout. He can take things easy. And under these circumstances, if he exerts himself, one could almost say that this episode to the other episodes has the relationship of nes to teva, of miracle to nature. What is a miracle? Something that defies the laws of nature. People have nature, and when they extend themselves beyond what they're naturally capable of and beyond what could be reasonably expected of them, they are essentially performing a miracle in terms of their own activities. Miracles beget miracles. Good deeds beget rewards. And therefore, with all credit due to every act of hospitality that Avram does, and it's always stellar, that becomes stockpiled, so to speak, in terms of zuchus avos, to be apportioned when and where relevant. But this was a miracle. This was beyond the call of nature, beyond the laws of nature, in terms of Avram's capacities, and he nonetheless exerted himself. It registers on a higher scale. This will beget miracles. But only this will beget miracles. And that's why it is all eyes are on this episode, whatever he did directly. If it's not going to be this, it's not going to be anything in terms of the miraculous sustenance of his descendants in the Midbar. And therefore, the water was born indirectly, whatever that means, that found itself, expressed itself in the indirectness of providing water for Bnei Yisrael. So this is a very interesting comment of the Be'er Yosef. Indeed, the very concept of Nisayon, according to the Maharal in the Sefer Derech HaChaim and the Perush and Shekhi Ovos, Nisayon actually derives from the word Nes, because a Nisayon, a test, calls, by definition, it calls upon the person to act beyond what they would call his comfort zone, beyond how he would naturally act, to rise above himself. And therefore, as a person provides the Nes, that is what a Nisayon is made of. It's interesting that this episode is not counted by anyone as one of the 10 Nisyonos of Avram, but nonetheless, it takes this place, one could almost say, as an honorary Nisayon, because he provided miraculous input from nonetheless. So these are the comments of Ber Yosef about this miracle episode of Hachnasas Orchim. It was a man-made miracle, and the man in question, of course, was Avram Avinu. Now, one of the guests, and each one has their job, as we know, Rashi tells us, to destroy Sodom and to heal Avram and to tell Sarah that she will have a child. And that happens in Pasuk Yud, where he says, Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Yud, Vayomer, Shov Ashuv Elecha, Kva'es Haya, speaking on Hashem's behalf, I will return as this time next year, V'hinei Ve'en Sarah Ishta. And Sarah will have a child. And Sarah laughs. As we know, they're already advanced in years. Pasuk Yud Beis, Vatitzchak Sarah Bekirba Leimor. She says, how can it be? I'm already advanced in years. Would I be young again? And Avram is old. I mean, it can't be. That's what she thought. And important to note, as we've mentioned in the past, we should understand Sarah. In other words, I think we overly identify with the malach who's giving her a bracha, because we know in hindsight that he is an angel representing Hashem. Well, with all that wisdom, of course, there's nothing to doubt. But don't forget, Avram and Sarah have no notion that these guests are actually angels. As far as they're concerned, these guests are just normal people, delirious ones at that. If they're out in the midday heat, they're partially cooked themselves, and they enjoy your hospitality. So there's a certain etiquette. If someone takes you in and provides you with nice hospitality, the correct thing to do is to say thank you, not to say that she's going to have a child next year. That's rather outside of the norm. Which means, as far as Sarah is concerned, she's hearing a blessing from someone who has no qualifications to speak of, and he just offers her tells her that she's going to have a child. Who would believe that? Now, what's to believe? It's not coming from any credible source. As far as Sarah is concerned, you know, a polite thank you would have done just fine, as opposed to this. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervenes, so to speak, and says, why did she laugh? She shouldn't have laughed, which means on Sarah's level, that is to say, on Sarah's impossibly high level, even a blessing from this wandering nomad, she should not have been dismissed. She could have taken it with a pinch of salt. She could have taken it with an element of discretion. But to dismiss it out of hand, on Sarah's level, that's worthy of criticism. Because anything is possible, regardless of who says it. It's never impossible. But just to get a bit of perspective in terms of Sarah, it's not a question of doubting Hashem's word. It's doubting just a random stranger's word. Many Mefarshim raise the question as to why Sarah is upbraided for laughing when Avram also laughs. And they seem very similar to each other. In the end of Parshas Lech Lecha, his laughter doesn't get as much publicity, shall we say, as hers, but it's in the Torah, and it says, "Vayipol Avram apanav, vayitzchak, vayomer belibo." He says, "Can it be? I'm 100 years old. Can I have a child? Halaven me'er shana yivaled." And Sarah is be 90? Can it be? And Avram gets a pass, and he doesn't get upbraided or criticized. And when Sarah laughs, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervenes. Why did Sarah laugh? But why is Sarah criticized and not Avram? Rashi comments, it's a well-known explanation of Rashi, and it's based in Unculus, because Unculus actually translates the laughter of Avram and the laughter of Sarah differently. It's very interesting, because in Lashon HaKodesh, the word is Vayitzchak and Vatitzchak. But you see in the translation, they move to different places. Whereby for Avram, his laughter is translated as he was joyous. The chadi was a laughter of joy. Whereas for Sarah, it was more a laughter of disbelief. So says Unculus. How does Unculus know that? That's another question. Perhaps from context. But that is the famous, and Rashi follows this path in distinguishing between the two. If you laugh out of joy, that's a good thing. If you laugh out of disbelief, it needs to be corrected. But it's very interesting to note further, as we shouldn't gloss over the details of these psukim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Pasuk Yud Gimel criticizes Sarah. Why did Sarah laugh? But in Pasuk Yud Dalet, he proceeds to reiterate the blessing. Ha'palemi Hashem Davar, is anything beyond Hashem? Lamo'ed, in the correct time, Ashuv Eilecha Ko'es Hayah, this time next year. So that's quite interesting, because it's one thing, I mean, we've heard the bracha, everyone's heard the bracha, and Sarah heard it, but she didn't, on some level, she didn't believe it. So Hashem says, why is she laughing? Anything is possible. And then the message is clear. What seems to be perhaps unnecessary is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu then to restate the bracha, because the bracha's already been stated, and if the point is, you shouldn't have disbelieved, so then we have all the information we need. Why is it restated? And there's a very famous explanation of this matter, which is provided by the wife of Rabbi Arya Levine. This is quoted in the Sefer Aparshal Adaroseha from Avram Korman, a very knowledgeable person. And he directs our attention to the Haftorah. And it's interesting to see the Haftorah in tandem with the Parsha. The Haftorah is about the Isha Shunamis, Elisha, and he blesses her with a child, which is clearly the connection. But as we know, at a certain point, the child passed away. And she takes a trip to Elisha. And when Elisha hears that she's coming, and he's a bit surprised, and as in the words of the Pasuk, famously, Lo Chodesh Velo Shabbat, it's not a standard time to be visiting the Navi, and he sends Gehazi, his Gabbai, his Shamash, out to ask, is everything okay? From the moment she leaves her home until the moment she reaches Elisha, this woman only says one thing, and that is shalom. That's what she says to her husband when she leaves. As the pasuk says, the husband is a bit puzzled. Well, where is she going? He doesn't know what's happened to their son. She's left him in the room. He doesn't know where she's going. He says, Madua atalecha selav hayom, lo chodesh velo shabbos, right? And what does she say to him? Shalom. And furthermore, when Gehazi asked her, how is she and how's her son, she says, shalom. It isn't until she gets to Elisha, then she opens up and starts to talk to him about the situation. But what does it mean to say shalom? I mean, it's clearly not shalom. Is she merely being secretive, or she just doesn't want to talk about it? So Rabbi Ari Levine's wife said, the Rebbetzin Levine, that there is a concept which we find in the Gemara. It is true for everyone, but of course especially true for special people, people of stature. And in the words of the Gemara, Bris Kerusa L'Sfasayim. Bris Kerusa L'Sfasayim, there is a covenant that is sealed for the lips. And what that means is the things that people say make a difference. And the message is that, and again, depending on the level of a person, on their own spiritual stature, the things that they say do not only reflect reality, they can affect reality. Which means that because this woman, she's holding out clearly some hope that Elisha will be able to do something to bring her son back, she understands that she does not want to make it any more difficult for him to do that than it already is. It's already Tchiyas HaMeisim. How does it get harder than Tchiyas HaMeisim? It only gets hard. How can, if he's not alive, he's not alive. But if she says that he's not alive, could be there's no way back. She does not wish to add any impediment or seal or cement the reality of his situation, and therefore when her husband asks her, shalom. Even when Elisha asks her, shalom, until she gets to him, she doesn't want to make anything harder to reverse. That's an amazing explanation. And moreover, says the Rebbetzin, that brings us back to the difference between Sarah and Avram, if the way that the Rebbetzin learns the psukim. With regards to Avram, it says, Vayitzchak, Vehilach, Vayom Bilibo. He says in his heart. With regards to Sarah, it says, it does say Vatitchak Sarah Bekirba, inside, Lemor. And Lemor has more of a notion that she gave verbal expression to this. And that's the difference between them. Because such a sensitive miracle, she will be 90, he will be 100. It's not a simple matter. It can happen. But something that can stop it happening are the people involved saying it cannot happen. And therefore, with regards to Avram, perhaps the nature of the laughter is the same. Perhaps. The difference between them is Avram laughed in his heart. And in so doing, he did not provide any impediment for that to happen. There was no verbal expression. There's no bris kerusa l'sfasayim. Whereas when it came to Sarah, she said it, so she stopped it. And that's why she was rebuked. It wasn't just, so to speak, rebuke for the sake of rebuke, but rather she has now frustrated the bracha. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to intervene because the bracha needs to happen. But if it's been derailed, it needs to be reinstated. And that's why Avram says, not only, pardon me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, not only shouldn't he have laughed, but he now needs to restate the bracha to put it back on track, that it should happen with no impediment. That's how the Rebbetzin explained. Very interesting indeed. The truth is, to develop this a little further, having mentioned the Haftarah with the Isha Hashunamis, there is a fascinating approach here of the Meshech Chochma. Meshech Chochma at times devotes some comments to the Haftarah as well. And he asks the question, perhaps an overly simple question. And that is, as we know, she came to Elisha, and Elisha did what he did with the child, and the child was brought back to life. How was the child brought back to life? In whose merit was the child brought back to life? In what merit was the child brought back to life? Well, having asked the question, I think our simple response would be Elisha. I mean, Elisha, he's the Navi, and he can do these things. He's the Talmud of Eliyahu, and he was on a madriga where he could bring a person back to life, and that's it. But Meshech Chochma says that although, of course, it happened through Elisha, he was the person involved, but the fuel, so to speak, the parnasa for the miracle, did not come from Elisha. It came from the Isha Shunamis. It came from her. But what fuel did she provide? What input, what energy did she provide in order to finance, so to speak, such a miracle? The answer, says Meshech Chochma, is that it was her belief. It was Elisha as a Navi of Hashem that he could do it. That's what allowed it to happen. And really the point of the Meshech Chochma is that Emunah as well is not purely reactive. Emunah can be proactive. Belief that something can happen is its own merit, is its own zechus, which can then be the merit that thereby provides it with the ability to happen. And that's what happened here. And thus we find, says Meshech Chochma, if you compare and contrast this episode of Elisha bringing the child back to life with the earlier episode of Eliyahu bringing the child back to life, in Eliyahu's case, the pasuk says, "Vayishma Hashem bekol Eliyahu." Eliyahu davened or did whatever he had to do in order to bring it about, and Hashem responded to him. That's what the pasuk says, "Vayishma Hashem bekol Eliyahu." Because in Eliyahu's case, it came from Eliyahu, but it doesn't say that here. It's a conspicuous silence. It just says Hashem brought the child back to life. It doesn't say Vayishma Hashem b'kol Elisha, because the focus is not on Elisha. He was, of course, the Navi through which it happened. But the fuel for the nace was not Elisha's endeavors. It was the Isha Shunamis. And therefore, that element is lacking, tying it to Elisha. Further, as he comments on the details of that episode, for we know that Elisha sent his staff. That was the first thing he did. He sent Gehazi with his staff to the child to place it on the child. Elisha said, and Gehazi came back and said, nothing's happening. And then that's when Elisha went himself. But what is behind this first ineffectual attempt to bring him back to life through the staff? Why does he think that the staff will have that effect? Which in the end it doesn't. The staff is called Mishanto, Mishenes. Mishenes, it's called Mishenes because one leans on the staff. Mishenes represents support. And right, we say by Hi Hashem le Mishani, Hashem will be my support. Mishan and Mishenes. Mishan is to be supported by something. And therefore Meshech Chochma says that Elisha himself initially understood that perhaps the input that could bring about the miracle is the merit of this woman and her husband who had always taken him in. That's how the Haftarah begins. They always provide hospitality for him. They provided support for him. And that was an outstanding zechus for them. And Elisha initially intuits and reasons that if there's going to be a zechus for this woman through which the child will come back to life, it's the way that she supported Elisha, and therefore he sends a symbol of support, Mishanto, his staff, to the child, So that it should bring about that desired effect. But it didn't. And the reason why, says Meshech Chachma, is because it wasn't coming through the support that she gave. It was purely through the faith that she had. Elisha is a Navi of Hashem. Hashem empowers him to do so. He can bring him back to life. That's all it was about. And then, says Meshech Chachma, just one final point, which is an amazing element within this situation. When Elisha hears that this woman is coming, see, he sends Gehazi to ask if everything's okay. How is she? How's her husband? How's the child? And that's one of the times that she says, Shalom. She's not saying anything about Shalom until she gets to Elisha. But that question is very interesting. Because that very question indicates that Elisha did to the child. There's no way he's going to say, how's your son, if he knows that the son is no longer living. So Elisha doesn't know. And that's a very important part of the equation. The reason being that this, because the fuel, as we're saying, for the miracle was her trust in Elisha, in his koach as a Navi of Hashem, it was actually tested at this point. Because he's a Navi, he's a prophet, and he knows what he needs to know, and he doesn't even know what's happened. So that was a setback for her. Because it's a knock, actually, to her faith in Elisha. Because she's coming to him with full trust that Hashem has given him full power here. He doesn't even have full knowledge. Which means it must have been a very delicate moment when she receives an inquiry in Elisha's name. How's your son? Because that's telling her he doesn't know. And what does she say? Shalom. And she proceeds. But what does it mean that she proceeds? Notwithstanding the fact that he doesn't know, and I would have expected him to know because he's a Navi, I still trust that Hashem will empower him to bring the child back to life. And in a sense, that raised the level of her faith because it was tested through his lack of knowledge about the situation. And still she came through, and that's what brought the child back to life. Very profound comments of Meshech Chachma, because it turns out that in the case of the Isha Shunamis, it's more than what we originally said. It's not only that her role is not to provide an impediment to Elisha acting. She actually provides the energy to enable Elisha to act. It's not that she shouldn't get in the way. She is the way, because it's her emunah. She is proactive here in empowering Elisha, so to speak, through her emunah in him as a Navi Hashem. So that seems to set her aside from Sarah. Seems to. Yet over Shabbos, I came across in a very special sefer, which is called Ner Uziel. Ner Uziel was written by Rav Uziel Milevsky, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. He taught in Or Sameach, and these are two volumes. For some reason, they're not in print, which is a wrong that should be righted. Thank you. It is a very, very special sefer. The questions that he raises and the way that he discusses them, very wonderful sefer. And he is inclined, he doesn't quote the Meshech Chachma, in fact, quite commonly he doesn't quote his sources per se, but he is inclined to understand that the same thing was happening with Sarah. That is to say, again, not only was Sarah's job not to get in the way, but Sarah's faith in the bracha was what would bring it about. And why does he say that? He raises a disarmingly simple question. There were three guests, that is to say, three angels, and each one had a job. And what were the jobs? Again, as we know, Gabriel's job was to destroy Sodom, and Raphael's job was to heal Avram, and subsequently to save Lot. And Michal's job was to tell them that they're going to have a child. So Rabbi Levsky says, you know, of those three, only two of them sound like they're actually doing anything. Destroying Sodom is doing something. Healing Avram is doing something, because prior to destroying Sodom, it's there, and once you destroyed it, it's not. Prior to healing Avram, he's sick, and once you heal him, he's better. What is the third job of telling Sarah she'll have a child? That's not a job. That's good news, but you're not doing anything. It's an interesting shaila. I mean to say, maybe she'll like to know. You know what? She'll know. When she has a child, she'll know. Most women, when they are expecting to go through childbirth, they know. So it's not something that she won't find out at the appropriate time. So what type of task is it? What type of mission is it to tell her? You're not doing anything, says Rambelevsky, but you are. Because this is how it will happen. For Sarah to hear it and to believe it. That's the fuel that will allow it to happen. And he proceeds to say something very interesting. And so it's actually puzzled me often because, as we know, the name of the angel is a characteristic of that angel. And in some cases, it's quite easy to see how. If you tell me that Raphael is the angel of healing, I understand how, because Raphuah is healing. And if you tell me that Gabriel is an angel of destruction, I understand that because Gevura is might. But that brings us to Michael, because what does Mich mean? I don't have attraction or association in the way that I do with Raphael and Gabriel. It's a good China. What's his place? And what's the meaning of his name? So Malevsky says the meaning of Michael is very simply Michael. Who is like God. And what that means is that he is the angel of mercy, mimini Michael, mismoli Gabriel. But the angel of mercy, even mercy, what fuels HaKadosh Baruch Hu's compassion? It could be that people are without merit, but if they have the merit of faith, which is represented by the name Michael, as we would say, Michelokeinu, Michadoneinu, right? A profound and implicit trust and faith in Hashem. That's what empowers Michael. And therefore, as Michael, he comes to Sarah to begin the process to allow her to have a child by telling her and then for her to believe it. It happens to be that the bar was set again in the event impossibly high because she didn't know that he's Michael and therefore he's just some random stranger, and on some level she didn't accept it. Which means in terms of 100%, there was a percent of a percentile missing. But it was redressed, because as HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervenes and says, no, it can certainly happen, at that point Sarah 100% believes it, and that's what initiated the process of her being able to have a child. So in a sense, it closes a circle. We've come full circle. Because what begins initially with Sarah's role as not blocking the bracha by verbally objecting to it or disbelieving it, which then becomes the Isha Shunamis similarly, just by saying Shalom, but then we saw that through the Meshech Chochma that the Isha Shunamis has a more proactive role in allowing it to happen through her faith in Elisha, and then coming back to Sarah, according to the Ne'er Uziel, that's exactly what happened in Sarah's case as well. So these are wonderful insights in the beginning of the parsha. Well, as we move forward, and in a sense, in a related matter, we move from the beginning to the end, from hospitality to the Akedah. And of course, there's plenty to say about the Akedah, but in Perek Kaf Beis, which is the Perek of the Akedah, Pasuk Ches is the one that we will be looking at. Pasuk Ches. And we'll see how it's connected somewhat thematically to our first discussion. Vayomer, if we begin with Pasuk Zayin, just to get our context, Vayomer Yitzchak el Avraham Aviv, Vayomer Avi, Vayomer Neni Bini, yes, here I am, Vayomer Hinei Ha'esh Ba'etzim, Vayeyaseh La'olah. Okay, I see the fire, I see the wood, where's the lamb for the Olah? And what does Avram respond? And Avram knows the answer. But he says, Vayomer Avram, Hashem will choose the lamb. And what does he mean by that? Rashi explains, it's a rather evasive type of answer. Maybe he doesn't want to tell him. But according to Rashi, he does tell him. Because Rashi explains, Yiro lo haseh le'olo v'ni means, Klomar, Year of Yibchalo Aser, Hashem will choose the ser. And if there's no lamb, Vimein ser, then Le'ola B'ni. It's almost like there's two options here. There's two, but he knows which one it's going to be. But that's the way he kind of almost like breaks the news to Yitzhak that it's going to be him. But the question is, why does he answer him in this way, in this rather roundabout way, as opposed to directly? Again, perhaps balabatishly, it's the kindest way to let him know, in this very oblique and indirect manner. But there is more to the situation than that. The Mishnah in Maseches Taanis, in the second parak, which deals with a certain added tefillahs that they would say in times of need, specifically in times of rain. If the rain was withheld, chas v'sholom, for a significant amount of time, they would begin the fast, and they would get progressively more severe. And they would, at a certain point, they would add brachas, six extra brachas. The shmona esrei would become 24. And each one would have a special ending. And the way that the first bracha would end is as follows. Mishe ono la'avram avinu b'har Moriah. The one who answered Avram at Har Moriah, time of the Akedah, who yishma tzachaschem, who yaneschem, he should answer you, b'yishma kol tzachaschem hayom hazeh, he should hear your cries on this day. So in other words, invoking, of course, the merit of Avram. Misha ono la'avram avinu b'har Moriah. So the one who answered Avram, that tells us that Avram was davening on Har HaMoriah. But the question is, what was the tefillah that Hashem answered? We're now being informed that Hashem answered Avram. That, say that backwards, that means Avram was davening. But we don't know what the tefillah was about. Now it could be that the reference is to Avram's tefillah when the Akedah was over, because that's actually in the pasuk. You can see he calls the name of the place Hashem Yireh. Hashem Yomer Ayom, Bahar Hashem Yireh. Hashem should always be there. Hashem should always be present. Hashem should always be visible on Har Moriah and accessible. That's a tefillah, and maybe that is the tefillah that we're referring to. However, the Yerushalmi, the Talmud Yerushalmi in Maseches Taanis, says quite clearly that the tefillah in question of Avram is a tefillah that Yitzchak should be saved, that Yitzchak should be spared. Now, this is very interesting, because now Misha Ono LaAvram Avinu, the one who answered Avram, when Avram davened that he shouldn't actually have to kill Yitzchak. That's very interesting. And moreover, not only was Avram davening over this, but we also say in the Slichos, for those who said Bahav this morning, it was in the Slichos, right? Misha ona la'Avram Avinu b'Har Moriah hu yanenu. Misha ona le'Yitzchak b'no kishenei kadagabe hamizbechem. You know that from Slichos. Hu yanenu. But it's in those Misha onas that we say. So now, if we hear the Slichos, they're telling us, not only did Avram daven for something on Har Moriah, Yitzchak also davened. But what's Yitzchak davening for? The answer is the same thing. Avram is davening, you shouldn't have to kill Yitzchak. And Yitzchak is davening, they shouldn't have to be killed. And Hashem answered their prayers. Misha ono, hu yaneinu. Now, but we have no reference in the psukim to these prayers. So the Sefer Shiras David, Rav Aaron David Goldberg, Shalita, the Tel Yeshiva, he explains that the reference in the pasuk to this, it's a chiddush, but the reference of the pasuk to this tefillah is the way Rashi explains pasuk ches, where Avram says, Elokim yirelo haseh, Hashem will show us the lamb. If there's not a lamb, it's going to be you. But he wasn't just being evasive. There was an aspect of tefillah here. Let it not be Yitzchak. Let it be just an animal who can be an olah. That's the tefillah. And yet, as tefillahs go, it's rather vague. It's rather understated. With so much at stake, one perhaps would have expected that the tefillah should have been. I mean, look how Avraham Dab, I mean, if we may say, look how Avraham Dab was to the people of Sodom. No details are left out. It's all very black and white. Maybe there's 50, maybe there's 49. It's a whole negotiating process. And when it comes to Yitzhak, it's a remez. It's a veiled prayer. But why would he do that? And moreover, if we're saying the source of the idea that he's davening, that the Akedah should be averted, is in Rashi, but comments of Rashi elsewhere do not give us the message that Avram was thought that it could be averted at all. He was moving very steadily towards it. You find, for example, Rashi said, when the Pasuk says, Vayeshkem Avram Baboker, he got up early, Rashi says, he's on his way. Nizdares lemitzvah. It's happening. He saddles his own donkey, right, out of love for the mitzvah. That means that it's quite clear to him that this is what's happening. So how are we to reconcile these two seemingly conflicting messages of Rashi? On the one hand, seemingly Rashi is saying that Avram, he's doing whatever he can, that the Akedah shouldn't happen, and he's davening on whatever level he is. On the other hand, he's moving with alacrity and with devotion towards the Akedah. Well, how can we answer this? Reb Leib Hyman Zatzal, who was the rabbi of the Groshel in Beit Begana, a great mechadish, he explains that the answer really is found in the background to all of this. What is the background to the Akedah? The Pasuk, again, is rather difficult to pin down, because the chapters begins just with the words Achara Dvarim Ha'ele, after these words. And the Pasuk doesn't specify which words, which is why Rashi gives more than one explanation, as we know. The first explanation is, as Rashi says, Acharat Varma Eile, Yesh Merab Oseinu Omrim. Rashi immediately says, Yesh Merab Oseinu. You've got to go to Rab Oseinu, that is to say, you've got to go to the Medrash, because the Pasuk is not going to help you. Because the most recently mentioned parsha, as far as Rashi is concerned, which is Avram's dealing with Abimelech, has nothing to do with it at all. So Acharat Varma Eile, you have to transcend the immediate context and access Rabbi Seinu, who have their midrashim here. Yesh Rabbi Seinu Omrim Sam Say Acharat Varm Shel Satan. You know what preempted? You know what brought about and begat the Akedah? It's the words of the Satan. What did he do? What did he say? Shahay Mekatrik the Omer. He accused Avram and said, "Mikol Sheu Seuda Sheasa Avram." You know, when Yitzchak was 2 years old, Biyom Hikamel Et Yitzchak, and Avram made a suda. He didn't offer any korban. Lo Hikriv Lefanecha Parechad Ayelachad. He just had a suda. Now, what's Hashem's response to that? Amar Lo. Hashem says to the Satan, so to speak, presenting these forces. Klumasa El Bishvil Beno. The whole party was for his son. Ilo Ayisi, Omelo, Zavachoso, Zabechoso Lefanai, Lo Hayama Aklik. If I told him to offer his son as a korban, he would. And that's the trigger for the Akedah. Acharat Varma Eile, that's what happened. That's one approach. B'yesh Omrim, says Rashi, second approach, it's Achar Devar Shel Yishmael. It's something else, it's another dialogue. Because Yishmael was bragging over Yitzchak. He says, I'm a bigger tzaddik than you are, says Yishmael. As we know, Yishmael is capable of making these great grand statements. Because I had Mila when I was 13 years old, velo micha. You were 8 days old, what could you do? So it's more of a schus for me than for you. So Yitzchak says, be'eva echad atam yareini. So that's just one limb. Ilo amar li HaKadosh Baruch Hu zaveh atmecha lefane lo ayisim akev. If Hashem would tell me that to offer my entire existence, I would not withhold. And then the Akedah. Now, what's interesting is we have these two comments of Rashi. If we go back to the first one, it sounds like, because I think the way we normally understand is that the Satan says, well, he didn't offer a korban, and therefore that's not acceptable. And Hashem says, but he would offer his son. And that's the end of the dialogue. But then the Akedah happens. And Rav Hyman explains that actually this accusation against Avram, again, these are the madrigas of Avram, the madrigas of the Avos, it was a credible accusation. That is to say, it was a potent indictment of Avram on his level, that he did not bring a korban. And therefore, from a certain point of view, Hashem's response that he would be prepared to offer his son was in the offing, meaning that is what the highest level of justice actually demands. If it's meted out with that exactitude to Avram, with the full force of Midas Hadin. It wasn't just a response. It is the response that's required. And it was actually required of Avram to follow through with it in terms of pure Midas Hadin. Now, the question is, however, that happened rather a long time ago. As far as we're concerned, Rashi certainly explains, at the time of the Akedah, Yitzhak was 37 years old, according to the Cheshbon. Now, the party, the Suda that Abraham made for Yitzhak, was when Yitzhak was 2 years old. That's 35 years earlier. Presumably, the accusation of the Satan and the ensuing response of Hashem, which from a certain point of view is a decree, that Avram, a sentence, that Avram really needs to forfeit Yitzchak, that happened many, many years ago. How then can we say, Achar Dvar Ma'ela, as a result of that conversation, Hashem told Avram, that 35 years is a long time, it's a lag. But the answer, says the Chikrei Lev, says the Bleib Hyman, is that there's two people in the equation. There's Avram and there's Yitzchak, which means, even if it's true that the full measure of Midas Hadin demands that Avram forfeit Yitzhak, but Yitzhak is also a person. Yitzhak also has his rights to existence. He doesn't need to suffer just because there's an indictment on Avram. Something else needs to happen. It's a very complex equation, but there's two people in the equation. And therefore, it's almost like suspended, a suspended sentence, until Yitzhak actualizes it. When he says those words, if Hashem would ask me to offer my life, I would do it. And that, Drusa L'Sfasayim, back to the power of speech, that now brings Yitzchak into the equation, because that's Poseach Pele Satan, literally. And what's amazing about this approach of Rav Hyman is that he does not see these two explanations of Rashi as being in conflict with each other. Some say it was because of the conversation with the Satan and Hashem about Avram. And others say it was between Yitzhak and Ishmael. They're both there. They're both pieces in the equation. It begins with Avram, and it's pending until it's actualized through the words of Yitzhak, who's the only one who has yet to come to the table here, in terms of the Akedah, who then says, if Hashem asked me to offer my life, I would do it. And that's when it happens. And at this point, Midas Hadin is engaged, and that is why we find that the pasuk says, "Va'yachar advar me'ele v'ha Elokim niso es Avram." Ha Elokim is the name of Din. Here is Midas Hadin addressing Avram, but from a certain point of view, there's more to the timing than what we've said, because Rashi himself, it's a pele. For Rashi to say that Achar Dvar Me'ela, what precipitated the Akedah, is Hashem's words with the Satan, not only was there a time lag, but the Pasuk itself indicates that there was no time lag. For as we know, how the Pasuk begins, Vayehi Achar HaDvar Me'ela. There are two words in Lashon HaKodesh for after. Achar and Acharei. Sometimes there is Achar Dvar Me'ela, sometimes there is Acharei HaDvar Me'ela. Sometimes there is achar kein, sometimes there is acharei kein. What is the difference between them? Now, it is a machlokas in the Medrash, but Rashi is explicitly and expressly on side with the one who explains that achar, the difference between them is it straight after or a while after? In Rashi's words, samuch, very closely after, closely following, or muflag, it took a while until it would happen. And interestingly, as we may have mentioned in the past, the Radak, in the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, explains that actually the Lashon HaKodesh bears out this approach, that Achar is straight after, and Acharei is a good while after. How so? Because what is the difference between Achar and Acharei? I mean, they're the same word, with the Yud on the end, but what difference does it make? Because Achar means in the wake of, or in the aftermath of, And acharei actually is the plural of achar. So if achar is after, then acharei is afters. And what that means is after a few things that happened. That's muflag, as opposed to straight after. It's singular and plural. Very interesting. That's how you see, in a sense, the pshat of the word bears out this distinction that we find in the Medrash. Well, if achar means straight after, there is no way you can have a conversation when Yitzhak is 2 years old, and then the result is when he's 37 years old, and call that straight after. That's not achar. That's acharei. It must be, therefore, that the two explanations of Rashi are working together. It began with this conversation between the Satan and Hashem, but it became cemented and actualized with Yitzhak's conversation with Ishmael, and that took place shortly before the Akedah Achar Dvarim Ha'Ela. We don't have a timestamp for that, but it was certainly after, well after those events, and straight after that came the Akedah. Well, now, how would we, if we would say Achar Dvarim Ha'Ela, having mentioned all of this, in light of all of this, how would we depict or understand Avraham Avinu's position? Once we appreciate that Midas Hadin, Ha'elokim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, acting with the full force of exactitude of Midas Hadin, says that Yitzhak is forfeit. So Avram now proceeds, in a sense, with a blended approach. And it's very, it's amazing to consider, because there is always the chance that if Midas HaRachamim prevails, he won't have to do it. He understands this is a product of Hashem relating to him, the Midas Hadin. And if it happens, it will happen. And therefore, Avram, on the one hand, he's prepared for the fact that it may happen. He doesn't know. He has no guarantee that it will be averted. But he's entitled to ask that it's averted. Whenever a person has Midas Hadin meted out against them, they're entitled to ask for Rachamim. In other words, if this represents, shall we say, the subtotal of Hashem's will in every respect, so there's no way out. But in a sense, it represents Midas Hadin. Well, there is a counterpoint to Midas Hadin. It's called Midas HaRachamim. And very often, Midas Hadin says things should be a certain way, but one can change things through davening. But there's no guarantee. And thus you find this incredible situation, whereby Avram proceeds with the hope that it will be averted, but on the understanding that it might not be. And on the tzad that it is not averted, he is 100% prepared to go through with it, if need be. And not only is he prepared to go through with it, but look at those Rashis. It's a mitzvah. If that's what it has to be, he accepts it. In the end, if that was as Hashem's will as will prevail, that's a mitzvah. And you get up early for mitzvahs. And you do it yourself. And he saddles his own donkey. It's an incredible bringing together concomitantly and simultaneously. You have his hope, which he's allowed to have, but his full preparedness. And one doesn't get in the way of the other. That's Avraham Avinu. But that explains to us why his tefillah, again, we're in somewhat the esoteric realms, but his tefillah is not explicitly expressed, but rather it takes the form, it's almost an illusion. And the reason why is because he understands that as these things are expressed and described, he's under review from the Satan. The Satan has been accusing him. And therefore, if the Satan is accusing him, representing the forces of Din, accusing him, so he doesn't want his tefillah to be also met with such opposition and negation. And therefore, he davens in a way where it doesn't sound like a tefillah, but it is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that he's davening. And that's the way that it goes through. And in the end, it's answered. Which means that the final situation, or the full expression of the Akedah is a bit more nuanced than we normally think. As if to say, we normally say that it was never going to happen, and doesn't make a difference, but actually it's not so simple. It's not as if to say, Avram, he didn't realize that it wasn't going to happen. If only he knew, then it was going to happen. And it was Avram who averted it happening through tefillah. And not only did he avert it through tefillah, we draw on that tefillah. As we say, the one who answered Avram should answer you. And the one who answered Yitzhak should answer you. Avram and Yitzhak, they have this, again, this amazing side-by-side preparedness on the one hand, but also davening on the other hand. And therefore we draw on the zechus of the Akedah in all of its manifestations, in all of its expression. On the one hand, Avram is 100% prepared, and that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't stop him until the final moment. And when he does stop him, as the Pasuk says, Vayikra Elav Malach Hashem min Hashemayim, Yud Kei Vav Kei, that's Midas HaRachamim, intervene. But Midas HaRachamim doesn't intervene until it was clear beyond a shadow of a doubt that if he didn't intervene at that moment, he would have killed Yitzhak. Because that is the full response to the Satan. As if to say, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response at the time to the Satan, to kill Yitzhak, he would. And it wasn't just a response, as if to say, but hopefully he won't come to it and let's not go there. But rather, it was demonstrated through the fact that were he not stopped, he actually would have done it. That lays to rest the accusation of the Satan that it wouldn't have happened without the tefillah of Avraham Avinu. So these are this is an element of the Akedah which also, we talk about it, we're not conscious of what we mean when we talk about it. Because in the Slichas we talk about it the whole time, this aspect of a tefillah, and between the two of them, we are grateful beneficiaries of everything about the Akedah. The schus of Avram being prepared to do it, and the schus of Avram's tefillahs, they should bode well for us for a geula shelema.